Joe Branton.
Yes.
JB.
It's my name.
Joseph B. Rantonio.
Also my name.
Good. How would you like to find out why Fender are using less rosewood than before?
Well, that sounds exciting.
How about finding about some alternatives to the Line 6 M9?
Well, I love alternatives to the Line 6 M9.
That's good, because that's what we talked about on this week's Patreon episode.
We did.
Patreon.com/Guitar Nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support the Guitar Nerds podcast. $1 a month gets you the regular podcast ad-free and early. $5 a month gets you an extra half an hour every week, as well as access to the Joe Branton's Ranton mini-series and all the interviews that Matt's been doing with pedal builders around the world. And $10 a month gets you access to our super exclusive...
Exclusive!
Podcast producer tier. It's all good fun. Patreon.com/guitar nerds. We've got something like 80 hours worth of stuff you can listen to.
How much do you think, if there's 80 hours in total, how much do you think it breaks down to each of us talking?
I think, well, it's probably me 60 hours or something waffling and you guys doing the good stuff.
Yeah.
For the rest of the time. So if you want that 60 hours of me waffling, patreon.com/guitar nerds.
I'm actually buying a new guitar. I'm actually buying a new guitar. A guitar, not a bass guitar. I'm actually buying a new guitar, not a bass, a guitar. I will never need to buy another gigging bass. Now I've got the Stonefield. Bass. Now I've got the Stonefield.
Hello and welcome to the Guitar Nerds podcast. I'm your host Mark Packham, joined this evening by Matt Knight,
whoop whoop,
Jay Cross,
is the sound,
and Joe Branton.
Biddly bow.
Good, good.
I'm
glad we're all in a good mood.
Before we go anywhere, Joe, what did you just say there?
No.
What did you say?
I was just playing up.
You said biddly, and then what?
I was just playing up to the new intro music.
Oh.
Yeah, so we haven't actually just listened to it, but we all listened to it earlier in the week. We had some excellent music submitted by loyal listener Moog Gravit, using as we requested a few weeks ago, the Joe Branton voice sample about him having the last bass he's ever going to buy. We are taking submissions for intro music, but not just any intro music. They have to be using that sample from 2 weeks ago, was it, on the podcast?
Sure.
Joe said his current bass was the last one he's going to buy.
Well, I think that, you know, I said it was
the last.
I would never need to buy another.
I'll never
gigging
need
bass.
To buy another gigging bass.
That doesn't mean
I can't buy other basses for recreational purpose.
I think it does.
Well, that's true, actually. I think that's gigging. A good little loophole.
Gigging,
from Joe Branton
gigging was
there.
The key word.
Have you gigged the old Stonefield yet?
No, I haven't. But actually, I was with Jay the other day and I finally went and got it set up because I needed to get it set up for my tuning, and it actually required adding some extra wood to the bridge.
Good. Wood is good.
It's a shame, dear listener. I sort of feel like I can't really share this photo because it's got somebody else in it who, you know, I don't want to share an unsolicited photo of someone. But I was with Joe whilst he was trying to explain to our friend Graham, who is one of the most fantastic guitar techs in the land, what he needed to do in order to have this bass set up.
And I was explaining the 14-step restringing process.
The picture that I took of Graham's face when Joe was like halfway through the description was honestly it's just comedy gold. I sent it to Mark and Matt and it's absolutely fantastic. Just watching a bloke who has done nothing but fix guitars for 40 years look at you like he has never seen a guitar before. It was wonderful.
What I think the outcome of it was that he eventually said, yes, this system is very, very good.
Yeah.
But getting there, because it's so...
He actually, it does look very complicated. Like a guide, it comes in a little sort of booklet, but box thing, like a Filofax. And inside is like a little booklet that explains the tuning, how to restring and how to tune. And it does look very complicated. When I came to pick it up, he was like, oh yeah, it was very straightforward. He's fine then, but yeah, it is daunting.
Just the fun facts of Doom for restringing your Steinfield. Yeah. So you got it all sorted in the end. It's ready
and
to gig.
Oh, it's playing great at home. Like really, really enjoying it. I've been using it at home with a couple of different compressors with the Anasound. I'm sure we'll talk about this in a bit, but with the Anasound Lazy Comp and also with the Bright Onion baking powder.
Yeah.
And with the baking powder especially. It sounded absolutely brilliant at home. So tomorrow I'll take it out for its first like full band practice-y thing and we'll see.
See if it survives the punishing polymath rehearsal schedule that you've got on.
Exactly.
You're not going to be able to like throw it around and stuff like polymath are famed for, are you?
Well, I probably will. I mean,
What happens if you break the bridge?
It is a risk. I mean, this is... Emma was talking to me about this because we were like, look at the basses you've got at home and it's like the Sunburst Jazz Bass.
They're all wrecked.
Yeah, the Sunburst Jazz Bass I broke on the last tour. Like one of the bridge saddles came off in the last show.
But that's fine. It's a Fender.
Yeah,
like
so I can get replacement. Yeah, that's true. My Silver Squire Classic Vibe Jazz Bass I threw a few gigs ago and it landed awkwardly and a big chunk of it came off. And one of the tuning pegs. So that one.
Again, not an issue because you could just go to... all parts and buy another one.
And my 50s reissue P bass that I had refinished, I threw out into an audience at a show and then like pulled it back to me on the cable. But because it's an anodized scratch plate, the scratch plate bent, which then like ripped apart the jack input. So I need to get that changed.
So all of your gigging basses are broken.
Yeah.
So then you're about to take out a $4,000?
£4,500 Australian dollars. Yeah.
Base. I'm sure he's listening to this well pleased about talking about taking that
I did forewarn him about the sort of shows that it would be involved in. But yeah.
I'm interested to see how it holds up because it is very different. Or is this beginning of a more reserved Joe Branton?
I think I'm getting into, you know, my old age. Yeah, exactly. And maybe I need to start looking after my equipment a bit more.
So I guess this is growing up.
Indeed. So the long and short of that is if you've got any, if you want to take on the challenge of doing some Bowtastic theme music for this podcast, if you think you can beat Moog's effort that you heard at the start here, do send it in. Guitar Nerds, info@guitarnerds.net. That's how it will get to us. We'll have some fun with it. We've got another one for next week. You've not even heard that one. But do keep sending them in. I like this sort of vague trolling of Joe Branton. It's appreciated.
What about for people who've never listened to the podcast before and that's their first ever episode? Is that the first thing they hear?
I was thinking about that as we were just talking about this. I was like, wait, sometimes this podcast is not particularly accessible to the new listener, and by putting that at the front of it, it's going to be even less accessible.
I was thinking about this a little bit this week. Like, I've sort of caught up with a lot of the longer term podcasts I've been listening to, and I am a little bit, I realize I shouldn't be saying this as someone who's on a longer term podcast, but I'm always a little bit reluctant to jump into a new podcast that's been running for a long time because it is difficult to get the backstory
in jokes
and completely, and I was maybe not so much in jokes but like understanding who the people are. I was kind of thinking that maybe at some point we should do like a one-off bonus podcast that's kind of just for newer listeners, explaining who we are and how we know each other and what we do and stuff. I don't know, maybe we should do it when we're pissed at some point, but like...
I think that's probably a bad idea
to introduce
people to the podcast.
That's true. But maybe we should just do like a refresher podcast that's like, hi, hello, this is who we are and this is how we know each other.
I sort of feel the podcast is a little bit like comic books or professional wrestling in that every episode is someone's first episode, and we should make an attempt to onboard, as it's called, people. But also at the same time, just listen to it. If you thought it was fun, then maybe go back and listen to the other
spoilers,
ones.
Spoilers,
or just get on board from this point.
Spoilers.
Yeah, we've probably spoiled the gear and the year and stuff. Don't listen to them backwards. That'd be a bad idea. But, you know, I listen to things like Komodo Mayo, the film podcast. That's filled with in-jokes. And I didn't listen to the first one because it was in, like, 1987 or something. I think, you know, I think we do a not a bad job. I think we've all got quite distinct characters. You know who's who.
So this Bo Banton thing.
Yeah.
It's obviously
Bo Banton's out of control.
Yeah, there's now, there's about to be Bo Banton merch.
Really?
Yeah.
Someone's making a dollar off the hard work we put in for Bo Banton.
There's actually going to be Bo Banton merch.
What sort of merch?
You're going to be able to get a Bo Banton beanie. Yeah. I believe that's
perfect.
The Bo Beanie. That's one of the
Bo-ini.
Yeah. Yeah. So.
Good. What is it just going to say, Bo?
I assume it's just going to say
Bo. Do you know who's doing this now?
A picture of my face. No. I have. I think I do, but he absolutely adamantly denies it. So I don't know. Who knows?
I can't wait. Where can people find the Bo Banton merch? Why are you actively encouraging them to buy it?
Because it's going to be done for charity.
Okay,
again, it's nothing to do with me, but it's going to be like a charity sort of
Bo's fund
with my face on it. So there we go.
Is it a charity for people with bad taste in basses?
Yeah, probably.
Or just a questionable taste?
Questionable taste in instruments. Yeah, why not?
Good. Maybe we can finally get you into rehab like we've been promising to do. So, a bit of an interesting week in that we've had a bit of a shake-up in how we do things here at Guitar Nerds Towers. Well, in that you and Matt have taken full charge of Pedal of the Week.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know why I've allowed this to happen. The Lunatics, I'm just talking about you, Joe, are now running the proverbial asylum. So, the idea is to freshen up Pedal of the Week a little bit, and you guys did a little session the other day.
That's right. So we're co-hosting now.
Yeah. Matt, do you want to run down the pedals that you talk about what you actually shot on Saturday and like the vibe and what the pedals that you demoed?
We went all out, me and Joe Branton. We got new backdrop lights. It was actually, when I was setting up, I was like, I wonder if my living room will actually be big enough. And then through the camera lens, I was like, this looks absolutely wicked.
It did look great.
It did look really good. I was like, wow, this looks actually fairly professional. So with Joe editing it, we'll just have to wait and see, I suppose.
It's going
to
be a shambles.
I think actually the most exciting thing about doing this new series is the equipment that we've got on board. Not the pedals that we're doing in Pedal of the Week, but the equipment we've got to run them through is such a great great backline for all of that. Matt, you should talk the listeners through everything that we were using.
I suppose for people who have watched the previous videos, we've always used the Two Notes cab sim and the Laclean, which has been really good, but I think our biggest problem doing the videos so far has been like monitoring it. And maybe not necessarily getting a true representation of the sound. So this time we decided to, because we've got a bit more room, we're shooting in my flat. We can turn up a little bit. We're using an actual amp. So we're using my Morgan PR12 through a 2x12 Zilla cab. We're miking up the Greenback speaker.
Because the Zilla cab itself has a Greenback and a Vintage 30.
And a Vintage 30, yep. And then we're also taking a feed from a Hughes and Kettner Redbox.
Yeah.
So we can mix those two signals together to get a nice, true, good valve sound of the pedals, which I think was pretty important moving the kind of the videos forward for everyone. I thought it was time that we kind of maybe run through a setup that is maybe a little bit more recognizable.
And the PR12 is a great head. Matt, you should explain what the features of a Morgan PR12, because it is one of the best sounding clean heads I've ever heard, other than looking absolutely phenomenal.
Yeah, because it's more of a like a pedal platform amplifier, I suppose that's the term that's kind of been thrown around more recently with amp manufacturers, but basically a Fender Princeton with a souped up power transformer for tons of headroom, inbuilt spring reverb, but it's got an independent like dwell control, so you can set the amount of reverb and then like the mix into the actual signal, which is really nice. You can have a super splashy reverb, but really low in the mix. And yeah, just so much clean headroom that you basically can't overload it or get it to drive unless you turn it all the way up. So it makes it perfect for fuzz pedals or demoing delay pedals without the need for an effects loop or anything like that. So we can put everything in the front end and we know everything's going to sound super nice and super clean.
It sounded brilliant. And other than that, we've had a board made up by custom pedal boards.
We got to use that as well and make up some boards. And then after you left, Joe, I actually put some pedals on it and made a little mini board. I thought, here's an idea, I'm just going to throw it out into the podcast. I thought, since I started doing some live Facebook videos on like a Sunday, I thought, how about every so often I do build a board live and we'll go through all the pedals that we've got here that we've been sent for Guitar Nerds, and then people in the comments can like shout out what they want and then I'll like build it we'll plug it in and listen to it.
Yeah, that's a great idea. The other nice little thing we managed to get on that board is courtesy of Bright Onion. We've got a little routing box on the
box, which is nice, and an always on volume pedal, which was super nice. But the patch box is cool because we're getting sent an amp on Friday from Davis Amplification to do like a long-term test on, which has got an effects loop, so we'll be able to do some cool stuff with effects loops, 8-watt all valve, dual channel, blendable kind of wet and dry on the effects loop. So that's coming on Friday, so a little bit more to report on that as well.
Shall we have a quick talk about some of the stuff that you demoed at the weekend? Let's not go into too much detail because obviously people will see the videos when they come out, but I'm curious first off about the other amps that you demoed. Did you do some orange stuff?
We did do the orange Rocker 15 and Rocker 32, the two new combos that we've spoken about a bit on this podcast. So they're new 10-inch speaker combos, the 32 being its 210, which is designed very much for people who use stereo effects, which is super cool. So you've got like a stereo in on the back, a stereo effects loop, which allows you to do one of two things. You can either run one of the speakers wet and the other one clean, or you can ping pong delays and reverbs and things between them. So that was super cool. Really enjoyed doing those.
Did it? One thing that interested me with that was with the speakers being so close together. You've got a relatively small soundstage there. Do you still get the ping pong effect? Is it that obvious? Because I've always thought that you need a lot of space for that to work.
Because this is new for us, there was obviously some limitations on what we could record.
Sure.
And we basically need a bigger mixer to add more mics. And I thought, actually, the best thing, because I run a wet dry setup at home rather than a stereo setup, we actually demoed everything wet dry, because for me, I think you get more impact that way. So we ran the Boss DC2, and then we took one of the outs into a DD3. And the way a chorus pedal actually works is it sends one channel completely dry and one channel completely affected, but the mix of those two speakers gives you that huge chorus sound.
Right, okay.
And that's how it works on a JC120, which I only found out maybe a year ago.
A 120, only one speaker?
Only one speaker is one chorus, because if you plug into the new Roland JC40, you've got two inputs like a JC120, but if you plug two guitars in, and you turn the chorus on, one guitar has chorus and one guitar is clean, which is quite cool.
That makes a lot of sense. If once I think about my my Space Echo, the SRE 555, because that actually it says it very obviously on the top which effects go to which out if you're using it in stereo. And the chorus is only in one channel. I hadn't thought about it until you said that.
Yeah, so that's, so we did that. So we got, I think the way it probably worked was that we got chorus and delay through one speaker, and then one speaker was completely dry, and then we mic'd up the wet speaker and then took the dry speaker feed from the Hughes & Kettner red box.
Gotcha.
And the sound out of that was great. I was like, actually, that's a great way to do it live, because then you're taking a direct live feed into a desk via an XLR, and then you're miking an affected speaker up to go through the PA as well.
Although that wouldn't work in like very large venues, would it, obviously?
Well, no, because obviously you'd still be blending things together anyway. But it was quite a cool way to kind of record it.
Yeah.
But the great, I thought the best thing about it was that for me, I love the sound of Orange amps, but I've never really used them because I run loads of pedals straight into the front end. And obviously when you add loads of gain, everything sounds super mushy, where this just sounded like totally crystal clear.
But it
then you had this
great
amazing
headroom.
Top layer of distortion over it. So you had this amazing orange crunch sound, but then underneath you just had all this lovely like chorus and delay that, and they just sat on top of each other so well.
That's awesome.
I was like, for a gigging amp, amazing. And the 15, I thought as a bedroom amp, is an absolute winner.
I thought it was a great all-rounder because it's got a feature in the back, a headroom or bedroom switch,
yeah,
which allows the...
fantastic name. That yeah. works so well.
But it allows it to switch between... In headroom, you can switch between 15 and 7 watts, and in bedroom, you can split between 1 watt and half a watt.
Yep.
And even at half a watt, it sounded great.
Really?
Like, I expected to get a bit sort of, you know, be in a box sort of thing. But
usable bedroom volumes.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
But also, it actually even went relatively loud and still
volumes.
Sounded good. Yeah.
Headroom
but,
volumes.
But I thought it was great. I thought it was a really loud 15 watt. I mean, you'd expect that from Orange, I guess, anyway. But I was like, this is absolutely... This has got to be one of the best, like, affordable gigging amps on the market at the moment.
They're not a lot of money at all, are they? I seem to remember.
Like $599, I think.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's reasonable, I guess.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
It's great.
That's the same price as you pay for a Blues Junior.
Exactly.
That's true, yeah.
And I thought it was way more versatile than a Blues Junior.
Because
it sounded way better.
Jay, I know when you interviewed him, he said it's not like Tiny Terror Mark II.
Yeah.
It's like more of a future version of the Rocker 30.
Well, which is...
And the TH-30. And it's just like he's taken that platform and taken what was great about the Tiny Terror and then kind of like mushed them together into an amp that was just like, wow, it's like the best of both worlds. Really.
I've been so, so impressed with this kind of like era of Orange amps. You know, I think what they've been doing is just... absolutely phenomenal. You know, you think back to, you know, where are we, like 5 years ago? I mean, even although it's not for everyone, the Micro Terror, you know, what a fantastic little innovation. You know, everybody loved it. And then straight after that, we had like the OR15, like the smaller.
I still think they're good.
Absolutely amazing. And then the Dual Darks, like the Dual Darks are so good.
And let's not forget the Jim Root. I loved the Jim Root.
Completely. You know, just great amp after great amp after great amp. And I think one of the things that has, you know, that's faulted a little bit with, maybe not faulted, I mean, obviously, I don't know how many they're selling or whatever, but in comparison to those other amps that, you know, we've just talked about, this Rocker series doesn't seem to have... It's not got, like, a shtick. Do you know what I mean? It's not got,
they've been going on a lot about the stereo effects.
Completely they have. Absolutely. But, like, it's not like, oh, it's black, or, oh, it's really small. And I think it's... Because that isn't there, it hasn't immediately appeared in people's, like, in the front of people's minds, which I think is a shame, because they are great amps.
Yeah, they are, but that's it. It's kind of, it's just a great amp, I guess.
Should we talk a little bit very quickly about some of the pedals that we demoed? Because people are going to see the demos.
Should we just both pick, because we did loads, but let's just say like a highlight each. For me, it was...
Just two or three each, I reckon.
Okay, well, the French company, Anasound, they did their Lazy Comp, which I completely loved because I really like effects that don't have many controls. Because if you can make an effect sound good without giving all those options to people, that means you've... set it up right in the first place. So it's a one control compressor. So of course that one control is compression. No, it's not.
I already knew that it wasn't. And then when you said that, I was like, wait, I think he's got that wrong.
Yeah. It's the only control on it is a wet dry mix.
Yeah.
Which is great. So they've already set the amount of compression. They've already set the attack. They've set it all to be optimum. It was brilliant.
They're basically saying, this is the sound of the pedal. How much of it do you want?
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was absolutely brilliant. Wonderful sounding and a really unique, really great look as well.
Yeah.
It like had there's a bamboo top on the and a sound pedals with kind of like a laser etch, like cut into the bamboo panda on the front.
Yeah.
And this great big like green and a sound LED in there.
That I think is useful. Again, you know, we get criticized for talking about how pedals look, but actually the big green LED works in its favour. It's very, very visible. Yeah. And with the compressor, I guess when you're on stage, sometimes it's a bit hard to tell if you've got, you know, all the band going on around you. It might be a bit difficult to tell whether it's on or not. So having a huge indicator on there, I think, is, is a super bonus. So, Matt Knight, how about one from you?
I'm going to go with the ground control audio.
Amaratsu.
Yeah, sorry, I was making sure I got the company name right there.
Yeah, it is.
Because I loved it when I unboxed it, and I was like, the only problem is it's just, it's like almost too loud, but it sounds great when you kind of have it down low. And then when we plugged it in, we had that going into the Walrus Audio 385.
So the Amaratsu is a clean boost.
It's a single clean boost.
Yeah.
With a bright switch. And kind of I played for a bit and Joe sort of messed around with the volume control. And we were like, well, it goes from like, you know, sort of loud to super loud. But then when you turn it to zero and then just go between like on and off, it still does something to your sound, which I thought was great because it just kind of made everything sound bright and
beefy though as well. It had a like it really had a lot of EQ impact, like just in the off setting, which I thought was great. But the real thing with this is how you used it with the Walrus Audio.
Yeah, so we used the 385, which is the film projector preamp, on like a relatively like medium gain setting, turned the Amaratsu all the way up, and it basically didn't give any more volume. It just slammed the front end of the preamp and just turned it into like this incredible fuzz, where it was effectively just like collapsing the input of the amp. So just turned into this amazing like fuzz pedal, like you were basically, because it's like a amp preamp, I suppose, it was like you'd taken the booster, turned it up to full, and then put it straight into the front end of an amplifier.
Yeah, yeah.
So you got this amazing, like, vintage cranked amp sound.
Yeah, like, really organic sounding fuzz.
Like, totally blew my mind. I think those two together were just, like, that's just a great sound.
One more highlight from you, Joe Branton.
I wasn't thinking about getting it. Okay, so the other highlight, actually, and I wanted it to be a more obscure brand than this because I was really enjoying all the sort of the weird little boutique things that we were seeing. But actually, the thing that I loved the most was Earthquaker Devices. We had their new reverb and their new delay. But their reverb, what was that called, Matt? Do you remember?
The Transmisser.
The Transmisser reverb, which was in kind of reverb is so in vogue at the moment.
Yeah, yeah.
And reverbs are starting to become all the same. Like there are certain things, certain tick boxes that all reverbs have to have now, the shimmery thing and all of that sort of stuff. And this was not that, but it also wasn't like a traditional sort of spring sounding. If you want a reverb pedal, I would say don't buy this. But if you want a sort of bonkers, weird ambient pedal, it was like post rock in pedal form. It was so, you couldn't get a safe reverb from it.
So it's not just like a shimmer then, it's just
no.
It's not even
odd.
Like,
it's not even
there's
that,
no
though.
Reverb you can compare it with on the market. No, it doesn't nothing. Sound it's, like you, a reverb sound that it, you can buy anything
it,
else.
It would be difficult for me or Matt to try and explain it, other than just to give you an idea, there is an expression out for the frequency of the reverb.
Okay, weird.
There's like a resonant filter inside, like you turned the resonance all the way up and the cutoff all the way up on like a mixing deck, and then you get that kind of real high peak kind of frequency sweep.
I really want to hear
which
this.
Comes like
it's
in
so
mix
bonkers.
With the reverb. Yeah, it's really, it's just like Joe said, it's not, and they even say in the manual, this is not a reverb pedal for people who want a reverb pedal.
I kind of wish they hadn't called it a reverb pedal. They should have called it like an ambient pedal or something. Yeah, yeah. Because it's so much more an effect. Like I think of reverb as being quite an organic thing, and this was an effect.
It doesn't sound
like, more
like
a
spring reverb.
More like a modulation. Like
yes. This was like a modulation. You would use it for weirdness.
Right.
You would never use this as like, you know, reverb's that little touch that you put on your sound to sort of thicken it up, make it more creamy.
Well,
this was
just make it sound more natural, like it's in a room.
Yeah, exactly. It was just bonkers, but in a wholly positive way. Like, I didn't really know what the controls did, and we started messing around with it, and it was impossible to make it sound rubbish. And for a six-controlled pedal, I think that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
A really good Transmisser Earthquaker Device.
Is it in a standard size box?
Yeah, standard size box, but the finishes on their new pedals, they're all glitter, so it was purple glitter.
Cool.
Yes. All good.
Yeah, it was great.
And Earthquake can now do something called pedal doodle, where someone on the production line has started doodling on the inside of the back plate, and they only do it on certain ones. And like every time someone finds one, like they post a picture on Instagram and stuff, and people are like desperate to try and find them, but there's no like serial number connection. It's just like someone on the production line is like doodling inside these pedals.
Did we get a pedal? Did we get one?
We didn't. I checked both of them. I was a bit like,
that's a shame. That's
I don't even think they know once they get boxed. I think they're just like,
they're in there somewhere.
They're there for the future.
That's cool. That's neat. I'm into that.
Yeah, I like it.
Jay Cross, you also had a big weekend.
I did.
You were out and about at Brighton's Great Escape Festival.
I was.
Where people, bands and stuff, and young people who I can't relate to invade the city for a weekend.
Yeah, so the Great Escape is a music festival that is, it's kind of like, they're trying to make it like South by Southwest in the UK, but it's all, it's pretty much exclusively new bands. So it works in a very odd way, in that the venues get like booked out by record labels and like music managers and companies, and then they get bands to play their showcases.
So it's set up by like a marketing company, isn't it? But essentially,
not anymore. I think it's Live Nation now. I think it got bought by, I think originally it was a marketing company. And so like it was a very odd spin on a music festival. And like when it launched, like I guess like 10 years ago or so, there was a lot of people getting really angry because they couldn't get in to see the bands they wanted to see, because it's like, if the venue's filled up, the venue's filled up.
That's the biggest problem, is that most venues in Brighton are like 200 cap.
Completely.
Yeah,
completely.
And they sell, what, how many tickets? How many thousands of tickets?
There's a lot of tickets that get sold. But anyway, I bought a ticket for the, I actually only bought a day ticket for the Saturday, because there was actually only one band that I wanted to see, but he was, well, one fella, but he was playing twice. So I went along to that, and I went along to a couple of other bits and pieces. But what also happens alongside the festival is this thing called the Alternative Escape, which is pretty much all of the bands that are playing the Great Escape, except for the bigger headliners, also play a bunch of free shows in the city that happen in other venues that you don't have to pay to get into, which is, it's very, very odd. But so I went to some of that as well. But the whole, there was a lot of a lot of Fender about.
Okay.
Fender had a stage, and which was outside, which apparently was a bit of a literal washout the first day.
It was very rainy on Thursday.
Thursday and Friday. Thursday especially was very rainy. So I don't think anybody sort of stuck around for that. But just in the other venues, it was all, like, it was pretty much all Fender amps. So I went to see, the person I really wanted to see is this guy called John K. Sampson, who is better known for being the singer of the Canadian indie rock band The Weakerthans, and was an original member of Canadian punk rock band Propagandhi. But yeah, he is doing his own thing now, and it's like a lot softer. Mark's shaking his head.
Although I really like the Propagandhi stuff that he plays bass.
Isn't he like your musical hero?
The Weakerthans are my favourite band of all time. And yeah, he is my musical hero.
Have you actually met him?
I met him.
Did you play a gig?
I didn't, no. I met him after the show on Saturday. I just went up and shook his hand and said hello.
Did you cry?
I bet you were sweating.
I wasn't sweating, but I was like, this is a big deal. Because he's incredible. The Weakerthans are my favourite band. Anyway, he played two sets, and he played one on Saturday morning, and it was just him and his guitar and into a Hot Rod DeVille 410.
Yeah.
And it sounded absolutely incredible.
What guitar?
So he plays a Beardcell
a what?
Model 7 JKS. Which is,
sounds like Joe Branton's terrorist group, the Beardcell.
So it's his own signature guitar that has been made for him by a guy in Winnipeg, where he's from. and it's like a, it looks a bit like a Les Paul, but
right. It's all made of wood. Like all the knobs are wood and stuff.
All the, yeah, and like the.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
A scratch plate is wood.
Is and this this weird thing with like a slotted headstock?
No.
No.
No, but it's got, I think it's like made out of a single piece of, it's made more like a 335.
Right.
So it's like a, or like a, not a 335, a 355. In that it's a single piece of mahogany.
Right.
I think it's mahogany. I don't,
what was the model called?
Beard Cell, Model 7,
wow.
JKS.
That is a crazy looking guitar. I've just pulled it up.
Yeah. So he plays that, and it's two humbuckers, but like the guy who makes guitars, his like whole mantra is like he likes the way that electric guitars sound, but he doesn't like how they feel. Like they don't feel like it's really funny when you read his website. He refers to guitars and electric guitars,
right?
And it's very much like, right, well, this is an electric guitar. It's not a guitar, you know. It's really funny. But he, you know, he likes the way that guitars feel, and he's always been put off that electric guitars don't have the same sort of vibe to them. So he's made
What's
it
that
out
even
of like,
mean?
Well, you know, but he's made it out of the. I'm paraphrasing, obviously, yeah. But he's made it out of like a single piece of right. wood, and yeah, so he that into a 410, and honestly, just like it made me remember how much I fell in love with that 410, the 410. What was it, a DeVille? It was a DeVille, 410 DeVille. Like, I've seen a lot of those, a lot of that sort of configuration. I don't think I mentioned it, but a couple of weeks ago, a friend of mine bought off of Gumtree a PV Classic 50 410.
Oh, that's so damn cool.
But yeah. She doesn't live in Brighton, and so I like went and picked it up for her.
From the top floor of a high-rise block of
honestly,
flats.
Honestly, it was a nightmare. But, like, it sounded so good. Like, that speaker configuration sounds so good. You just don't want to have to move it anywhere.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is like, as soon as you stop playing the guitar and then are like, right, better pat this away now, it's like immediately you're like, oh, yeah, this is why I don't have this amp.
Well, it's the same
as
a small house.
Speaking of which, actually, Dan Grace, occasional podcaster, is just about to go and collect from Zilla his new custom 410.
Oh, nice.
In fact, we need to get him back on the podcast soon to talk about his new rig, because it is phenomenal.
Okay. I saw him today.
Oh, did you?
I saw him today driving the Bimmobile.
this is the Brighton Institute of Modern Music.
So our friend Dan Grace, friend of the podcast, works for the Brighton Institute of Modern Music, and he was driving a band up the A23 as I was on my way to work, and I saw it, and I was like, I bet that's Dan. And it was Dan. And as I drove past, he didn't see me. But I got into the lane in front of him, and I rolled down the window, and I did a rock hand out the window, and yeah, he looked really, really confused, and he couldn't see it was me, but he gave me one back.
Right, nice. good times. Rock and roll on the motorway. So that was the only guitar player that you saw at Great Escape. I wanted to talk a bit about what guitars you saw, but if you only saw one, then
I saw that. What else did I see?
You were on the way to another gig when I saw you, so you must have seen one there.
Yes, I did. I did go to another show. I went to an Alternative Escape show, and I saw a guy playing a Strat into a mini rec.
Okay,
which was cool. That sounded really good, actually.
I'd imagine it would. Those amps sound great.
And I also, I'll tell you the other thing that I saw that was really, really fantastic was on the Thursday, I went to see this band from London called Slow Coaches, who are really good, like a three-piece punk band. And the guitar player was playing a one of those FMT tellies. You know, the
mahogany body.
The mahogany, like, Korean-built ones with the through neck. And he was playing that into, again, a Fender he was behind the speaker. I couldn't see it. It was, I think it was a deluxe. I think it was a Hot Rod Deluxe. And during the last song, the bass player's amp stopped working. Like, just, she couldn't get any sound out of it. So she just put the bass, she just put the bass down and just sang for the last bit of the song.
Okay.
But like during the outro, she just put her mic up to the guitar, up to the guy playing guitar, and the sound that of just amplifying the strings being played through the PA sounded absolutely incredible.
Really?
It sounded massive.
There's a few famous, I can't remember which ones, but there's a famous record or like guitar engineer, and they quite often mic strings.
That, see, I was going to, that's one of the things, thanks for pressuring me on that one, because I was going to say, Joe, I think it would be the sort of thing that you could do really well if you like had another mic for Tim. Uh-huh. Like, so that when he's,
this is Tim is the guitar Tim, player,
the guitar player in Polymath. You could like mic that up and send the sound of him playing the strings through something.
Yes,
that's something you should experiment with. Honestly, I've never seen it done before, and it I went
through a whammy.
I went and spoke to the sound engineer afterwards and was like, that sounded good, didn't it? And he was like, I didn't think anyone else would notice. It filled the room up.
Wow.
Having that resonance like blow through the PA, it sounded absolutely incredible.
What you should do, Joe, what you should do, Joe, is put the strings through a whammy and just do it like less than half a step down, just really slightly out of tune, just to really annoy people. So you have the plugged-in guitar in tune and then the other one just a little bit out of tune. Go on, Matty.
I was going to say, on like a similar weird technique or doing something that you wouldn't normally do for miking, I always remember our friend Sparky and Chris's and Sean's band, Enos, the prog rock band about the monkey that goes to space. He had an iron lung vocoder pedal, and he used to, instead of plugging the mic in and then singing into it, he used to mic up the guitar cab with it. So obviously your guitar goes into the iron lung, into the rest of your pedal board, and then there's also a mic input. He mic'd up the cab that then went back through the speaker. And it just sounded mental because it gave it this weird, like, metallic, like it was trying to, like, vocode the sound of a guitar that was being vocoded.
Yeah, I just wonder how that would even work, because the idea is obviously that it's, you know, your singing acts as like a percussive instrument.
Amplifier. Yeah.
But no, because it doesn't work like that. The iron lung is not like a talk box type thing.
Oh.
It's like a traditional vocoder. So what it's doing is it basically is tuning your voice to the sound of the guitar. So when you're singing, it's playing your voice.
Kind of. So you sound a bit like the Transformers.
Yeah, like, it's not at the pitch of your guitar, but it's like blending your voice with the pitch of the guitar.
Right.
So what's coming out of the amp effectively is the same pitch as what you're playing on the guitar. So I don't really understand how that would pan out.
I think because the electroharmonics, they all do that. They synthesize the sound in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because it doesn't work like a traditional vocoder is obviously a much bigger unit. But yeah, I always remember he used to do that, which I thought sounded cool.
That's definitely something that Mike Matthews discovered entirely by accident and was like, yeah, let's just make this.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, completely. As it seems with all the electroharmonics coming out recently,
sure.
From the, they can't be bothered to do drives anymore. They're just like, we've had a few things in the cupboard for a while. Let's try this, see how we do. Talking about new stuff, why don't we delve into a little bit of
Nude Apostles.
We're 40 minutes into this podcast, and I didn't think we'd even make it to news. So much to talk about this week. First up, our friends at Magnetic Effects have relaunched
Sandra,
the wonderful satellite that we've been raving about, as the Sandare, I guess it is.
The Sandra.
Sandare. Sandare or Sandare. Who wants to talk about this?
I am happy to go about talking about it.
Good.
I still don't know what Sandare is, because I'm sure I googled it and I must have googled it wrong, because it came up as the French for pike fish and I'm sure he hasn't changed it from satellite to the fish. But yeah, I've actually had, we've got one at Guitar Nerds here, and I've had it on my board the last month or so, and it is probably one of my favourite just low gain preamp style pedals. I've been going between that and the 385. Just a super cool dynamic low to medium gain booster, and I suppose overdrive, that's got separate bass and treble controls. And I just set it for kind of just like extra warmth and to kind of push other drive pedals. Works great in front of an amplifier, gives you like a smooth lead sound, super clean booster. And I'm amazed that he's actually managed to make it even better, because I thought it was pretty much perfect as it was. But now it has an internal voltage doubler, so it goes from 9 to 18, so you've got more headroom. And then a high input impedance and a low output impedance means that it plays really well with other pedals. So like fuzzes before or after and things like that. So it works well with like a vintage fuzz face, for example. But yeah, a great pedal. And because we've had one in the box for ages, and then I kind of like got it out and I plugged it in and was like, oh, I forgot how good this was. Then when I was doing some reading about it, I was like, these are £109.
That's nuts, isn't it?
I was like, I would have easily, if like I'd have played that and someone said, okay, how much do you think this is? And then I looked at it and I felt the way it was built, I'd have gone, that's got to be £200 at least.
Yeah, made but in the UK as well, worth
made
mentioning.
Made in the UK as well. And the guy used to play in the Datsuns.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Have we scheduled him for a podcast interview?
No, I must. He did email me and said, obviously, I've updated this pedal. You know, can you give a shout out about it? And I was like, oh yeah, definitely. Love the satellite. He said he's, you know, going to stay in touch. And I was like, oh, we'll get you on the podcast. So I must book him in. I think the next person we've got is Blake from the Tone Mob's going to come and do. We're going to do like a hidden gems kind of thing, because he's got like every pedal in the world. So I think we're going to.
Yeah, yeah.
That's good. It's cool. It's cool that we're getting Blake on the podcast, because it's like, it's guitar podcast roundabouts, isn't it? At the moment.
It's meta. Very meta.
Everybody guessing on everybody else's
inside baseball
podcast. I think, actually reminds me, we've been invited on the Guitar Knobs podcast, okay. And we haven't got around to accepting. Well, no, we've accepted. We just haven't given them a date. So we'll do that.
Why don't we turn it all on its head, and rather than like building this like podcast community that seems like
rivalries,
it's coming, like, yeah, let's like. I think we should start talking smack on all the other podcasts.
I think we should start cutting promos on them, like doing proper like wrestling promos.
Let's start with Blake.
Yeah. Okay.
Because Matt's got to then. Sorry, mate. Oh.
Why don't we just start spreading like horrendous rumours about people on the internet? I think Detective James Cross has actually found out what Sandare means.
Yeah. Sandare is Swedish for the word transmitter, which I assume is a literal translation of satellite. Swedish. So.
Well, there you go.
It's gone a little bit more IKEA with his descriptions.
Bang-a-rang.
I'm really looking forward to hearing that. I personally didn't really click with the satellite when we first tried it, but hearing you be so pleasant about it, so complimentary about it, I want to listen to it again.
I must admit, because I went back and rewatched the Guitar Nerds video we did on it, and I was like, oh, this sounds really good. And then I read an article in Premier Guitar about top five pedals you should leave on all the time, and I was like, that sounds like what Guitar Nerds do a lot. So I was like, we've got one. So I unboxed it and plugged it in and went, I totally didn't get it the first time around.
Right.
And I think that's why I'm so glad we're using an actual amp and a bigger cab now for Pedal of the Week, because I think we're getting a much better representation of the pedals sound wise and because they're coming to me and I'm doing a little bit of pre-production and prep work on them, I can dial the sound in on the amp and have it ready for when we actually film.
Yeah, yeah.
So I know exactly how it's going to sound. Whereas if I had it before and then it's going through a simulator, doesn't quite sound the same.
Yeah.
So yeah, totally clicked with it more, and it almost makes you want to go back through the entire Guitar Nerds catalogue and kind of just like redo tons of the videos and just revisit all the pedals we've had before.
Maybe we could do some of that stuff for Facebook rather than YouTube.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm going to do once I get a better internet connection and I can start doing some proper live stuff. I think that's what I'm going
to
do.
I hear that Blake couldn't even work out how to turn that pedal on.
Really starting the beef, ramping it up. Joe Branton, King of Beef, do you want to tell me about the brand new Phil Jones bass BP400 and the Cab 47?
Yes, this is actually really exciting. I mean, I hear that Blake has been talking smack about this amp, but I actually think it's totally wicked. So, Phil Jones bass, they're a great company for bass amplification, but they have become incredibly uncool.
Yes.
So anyone,
I think they started off pretty uncool.
Yeah, but they were doing something that no one else was doing, and then everyone else sort of came in and did it differently, and Phil Jones kept doing the same thing. And
so
for people that don't know, Phil Jones bass really specialise in people with back problems. In that they make amps, but their number one thing is trying to make stuff lightweight rather than number one thing being make stuff sound good, which I think is a better way to go about it.
Well, I mean, that's subjective.
Yeah, of course. Their stuff does actually sound really, really good. I'm always concerned about a company that's like biggest priority is not the sound. But that said, I still think Phil Jones make great amps. Now, the really weird thing about Phil Jones amps is they'll do things like they'll make a... where companies are making 410s, they'll make a 16-4.
Yeah.
You know, it, like, as in 16 4-inch speakers in an amp, and the amp will be the shape of a chair. You know, it's like everything they did was bonkers, like weird-shaped and really unusual.
They're building more... when you say the shape of a chair, what you actually mean is they're building stuff that doesn't look like conventional guitar cap shapes.
Yes.
They look to me almost more like...
PA?
Custom-built PA stuff.
Yeah, exactly. It does look very much like PA. But
used to build PA at one point, I think. Yeah.
Well, it's all really well made. It's normally pretty expensive. They're pretty top-end, and like the Tolex finishes on their stuff is always really, really sound. But yeah, they've introduced this BP400, which is them moving into just a simple, lightweight amp head. So the BP400 is not 400 but 350 watt,
of course,
amp head, but you're getting Phil Jones quality. They're going to be retailing at like $800, so it's not, you know, that's a really sort of reasonable price, like mid-level price point for an amp head, and you're going to get something that's got the build quality that comes with all Phil Jones stuff. It looks super like substantial, well built. The controls and everything look really top notch, and it is absolutely dinky. So kind of really simple front end setup. It does also have a limiter on board. It's really cool. But kind of what's most exciting, like I haven't heard this yet, so I can't say any more than it looks like it's well built, and Phil Jones are a brilliant company, so it probably is really good, and it looks like it's a good price. But the other thing that's super cool is they've released a cab with it, which
Cab 47 is
cab
what it's called.
Cab 47, yes. Which looks to the untrained eye like a 410, but it's actually, in true Phil Jones bass style, a 4.7.
Indeed.
So it's 4 7-inch speakers, which is going to be so, like, so tight and so, like, they're... Phil Jones are especially popular with double bass players and, like, session-y guys who want that really super clean, toppy tone, that really modern bass tone, and I think these cabs look like they're going to do exactly that. The cabs... are set to be retailing at $600 a piece, making them very affordable for, you know, for a company that design everything around being, you know, being lightweight enough for you to use at small gigs and stuff like that. I think these are really well-priced bits of equipment for a company of their sort of level to be
definitely
doing.
Definitely. So, they seem to be much more affordable than their previous stuff,
exactly.
I seem
and
to remember.
It would be lovely to see Phil Jones bass sort of, you know, back on the market kind of in a big way, because they do make great stuff. It's just I've always kind of thought that they've missed trends. Like,
yeah.
They seem to always be making stuff that no one's interested in.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas this seems like a company that makes stuff really well, actually making something people want.
I tell you what, look at The volume control on the PB400 looks absolutely perfect. Like, it looks like something from NASA.
Yeah,
it's like a massive, just a massive knob that looks like... It, I mean, it honestly, it looks like you're opening a safe.
It looks like at the beginning of Back to the Future when Marty's turning the dials on the giant amplifier.
Oh, it looks amazing. Yeah, yeah. I'm into absolutely it. Fantastic.
Good, nice little bit of design. Jay Cross, do you want to... well, let's do one last bit of news because we're running way long on this episode. Let's do one last bit of news. Let's talk about the Cast Engineering Mike Zito Peace Drive.
Yeah, so the Mike Zito Peace Drive is a drive and boost in one. You can use either the drive.
This is from Cast Engineering.
So from Cast Engineering, who, you know, we all know and love. So it comes in Cast Engineering's now legendary sparkle finish. So this is in a lovely, tasteful orange sparkle.
Yeah.
So you've got a drive on one side, a boost on the other side. And you can switch whether it's driving to boost or boosting to drive.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, which is really nice. So Mike Zito is a like kind of country player. So we've not actually heard this yet, but like we listened to a couple of Mike Zito tracks, and you know, you kind of get the vibe that it's going from. I can assume that it's going to be like very transparent and very just like. Yeah, just nice sounding.
Yeah, from his listening to a couple of tracks of his stuff, it's very, I don't want to say it's like middle of the road country, but it's not like alt rock kind of country.
No, no,
it's
no.
It's very much like Americana
traditional like American rock music.
Yeah, so this is clearly not going to be something that suddenly switches into a kind of fuzzy overdrive, is it?
No.
It's very clean sounding.
I actually read an interview with Mike earlier today, and he said that this had been really well received, except Blake was given, I don't know, man, he said that he was giving him some real grief over it, and he just didn't
I
want,
heard that too.
Did you?
I think I read it.
I don't know, he said that Blake was just like being really rude to him.
Yeah,
so
terrible guy.
I don't know. My advice is, if you're a budding pedal builder, just stay away from speaking to Blake. Honestly,
real beef.
the funny thing is I kind of get that maybe the sarcasm, the British sarcasm, probably won't come across as well as it does here as it will in America. I think everyone who listens to it in the UK will be laughing. Everyone in America will be like, "Wow, they really don't like this guy."
Tell you what, for a pair of vegans, these two are dropping some substantial beef. Let's dive straight headlong into... Well, actually, first, before we do that, worth mentioning, this week, obviously, we found out that Chris Cornell passed away. Matt, you're, I would imagine, probably the biggest Soundgarden fan out of any of us.
Just like Soundgarden, man. They're a great band.
Yeah.
They're a great band.
They came along a few years before I was kind of really... getting into music, I guess.
They passed me by, but I realized that why they passed me by, actually, it was because I have always had Soundgarden and Savage Garden confused.
Did you think the lead singer of Savage Garden had passed away?
I didn't know they were two different bands, I'll be honest.
Were you truly, madly, deeply upset about that?
I mean, I just thought it was really unusual when that green 335 signature model came out. I was like, this is a really tasteful guitar.
Are you being genuine about this?
Yes.
Oh, yeah, incredible. So, I just wanted to say that because obviously, you know, Matt, you're a fan of the band. We all really, really liked the signature guitar, I think, that when it came out.
Absolutely fantastic guitar.
The whole guitar world seems kind of shook up about it. So anyway, worth mentioning, bit of sad news in the guitar world. Look after yourselves out there. And we'll dive headfirst into a single solitary
question line.
This kind of links into the previous topic, actually.
Savage Garden?
Yeah, and I completely forgot to write down who asked us this question. But the question is, what's your favourite artist's signature guitar? For me, it's always the ESP KH2 Vintage.
Ah!
Let's go.
Is that a Kirk Hammett signature
model? That guitar is cool, though. It is, honestly, because that's
Kirk Hammett is the worst guitarist of all time.
You're wrong.
No, I am lying. He's great.
That is the relict ESP version that's actually really tasteful. Done. It looks like a nice old guitar.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, they're awesome. Matt Knight, let's go to you first. Your favourite signature model of all time.
That's tricky. Do you remember there was that Gretsch that had three TV Jones pickups in it?
Stump-O-Matic.
The Stump-O-Matic.
You bought one that night.
I did buy one, and then I sold it really stupidly. That was stupid. A great guitar. That was an incredible price
as well.
I think, although one guitar, I'm going to go with one guitar I really like now, and then they never come up second hand, and I wish I bought one at the time, but I wish I'd bought one of the Frank Zappa Gibson SG Roxy guitars.
They were so gorgeous.
They were a great looking guitar. They sounded really cool. They had great pickup options on them, coil tap and like out of phase. They were £1,000. I should have bought one. They were an awesome guitar and probably one of my favorites because it wasn't too far away from anything like particularly mental, just like a nice looking SG.
Yeah. J Cross?
I've got two that I'm going to throw into the mix.
All right then. No, it's one. What's your favorite? It's not what your favorites. Go on, give us two.
I've got two that I'm going to throw into the mix.
Okay.
Number one is the Johnny Marr Jag.
Yes.
I just think that's just such a great guitar.
Well, it perfected the Jag
completely. It had so many little things to it.
Unlike so many signature models, which are really sort of like artist alternatives, this was like just fixing all the problems with Jaguars.
Like Mustang bridge and
the switching
system, you know, so it moved to the four-way selector switch that, you know, was popularized by the Bar Hartelli that, you know, we all absolutely adored.
Yeah.
And just a fantastic guitar. Absolutely fantastic guitar. The other one that I'm going to throw in there is a guitar that I had an opportunity to buy and didn't buy and have honestly regretted it ever since, and that is the Gibson Joan Jett Blackheart, which was a glorified melody maker. Let's make no bones about it. It was the cheapest guitar that Gibson made at the time, but it was like a double cut in a slightly... It was like halfway between a double cut Les Paul and an SG.
Yeah.
And it had hearts on the 12th fret. And very, it was amazing.
Very
I loved
cool.
it. But,
very neat.
I never bought it.
JB?
I was actually, on a quick side note, I was having a conversation today about the best signature models being the ones that managed to transcend being signature models. Obviously, the Les Paul is the most famous of
course.
That. But the John Petrucci's, like another example of an absolutely like fantastic... like workhorse guitar that's managed to transcend the fact that it's a signature model now, almost to the extent that they're just the JPs now. Like, but I don't even really think about them as being signature.
But I think that's the case for a lot of those, Music Man guitars. Like, think about the Steve Luke,
of course,
the Luke.
Yeah, the Luke.
You know, cause think about the Steve Lukather.
Well, of course, the Albert Lee as well.
And the Albert Lee, absolutely. You know, those are guitars that are absolutely signature models, but you don't think, like, when I first started working in a guitar shop and people would be like, oh, have you got any Lukes? I didn't know it was the geezer from Toto.
I think the key thing with that is, and what's different from probably before you started working in shops, is that they now pretty much don't make anything that isn't a signature model.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Before they used to do the whole Axis range, all the Super
Sports. There's the Cutlass and the...
Yeah, in the last couple of years they started doing that.
Yeah.
But for a while, all you could buy were Lukes or the JP stuff. And obviously now, you know, there's the St. Vincent and Albert Lee. Before that, they kind of did a whole range and then did a couple of signature models. And now it's basically the other way around. It's all signature models and there's a couple that aren't signature models that aren't particularly Music Man-y, you know, they're Fender-y, basically.
Yeah, completely.
I mean, the James Valentine. I mean,
well, exactly.
I don't really feel like I'm playing a signature one. I mean, maybe in America, more people were like, oh, James Valentine, Maroon 5, because I think they're a much bigger band over there than they are here. But it doesn't feel like a... So it just feels like a well-designed guitar that just happens to have someone else's name on it.
Of course. JB, you never said what your favourite was.
Well, I'd say my favourite is probably what I think... is probably the best-selling signature bass of all time. Probably is the Fender Mark Hoppus P bass, just for its just totally getting something right. Sheer simplicity, big P bass neck on a jazz bass body, so you've got more wood overall. Quarter pounder pickup. In the later models, it was reversed, which I always think is better. So you've got your more low end on your high strings, which I think is important if you play across your strings rather than up your board, and came in great colours, like through all the Blink movements. Like, you got the surf colours initially, then when they did their pants and jacket thing, they did like a black and a white model, and then it got modernised in the sort of plus 44 era, and you got like a tasteful like through green and through blonde, like really great guitar range. But on a sort of like personal, really weird, but I thought was a great signature model, the Gibson Chris Novoselic RD.
Yeah.
Remember that? It was an RD with jazz pickups in. Oh, what a cool bass.
I'm going to have to be rather dull and say the Gibson Billy Joe Armstrong signature Les Paul Jr.
But it's great. I mean, I think that's brilliant just because of the case that you get with it.
Yeah, nice leopard print innard case.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you know, I love Les Paul Juniors. I'm obviously quite a big fan of Green Day. And those guitars are awesome. It's just a really good 50 spec Les Paul Jr.
Completely.
He's using a totally weird guitar now, isn't he?
Because for a while he was using a Rock and Roll Relic.
No, it was a 275.
No. When I went to Guitar Camden, there was a brand of guitar called Wild Dog that make these really weird purple and gold pointy, just retro 50s things with like radiator humbuckers, and apparently he's been sent some of those and he's using on the recent tour.
Wow, I didn't know about that at all.
Wild Dog Guitars, I think it is.
Okay, I know that he's been pushing the Rock and Roll Relics Les Paul Jr. a lot. He's got like an American flag, but it's like black and white, like sparkle Rock and Roll Relics guitar. So we'll do some investigating on the old.
Yeah, I'll do some digging. I'll find out the actual model is.
Yeah, cool. With that, chaps, we are well over time on this podcast, so we should start wrapping things up. But if you want to hear an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, you can go to patreon.com/guitar nerds, where from as little as $1 a month, you can support Guitar Nerds. At the $1 tier, you get the full regular podcast without the ads and early. From $5 and upwards, you get an extra half an hour of Guitar Nerds content every week, plus also the access to the interviews that Matt's been doing and access to the mini-series Joe Branton's Rant On, which Series 2 soon?
Yeah, Series 2's coming up soon.
We also need to sort out doing Gear
I'm
of
gonna come round
Gear
to
of Yesteryear. We need to do that.
I've got all those magazines at home.
Okay,
I've separated them all.
Okay, well, we need to do that. Gear of Yesteryear coming up rather soon, I'd imagine. So all of that available at the $5 tier, and you can always go back and listen to all the old content. So there's like, I was looking the other day, this including the full episodes, there's like 120 or 130 things on Patreon for you to listen to, which is bonkers because most of them run to an hour or half an hour for the bonus one. So there's a whole lot on there, lots to listen to. And we also have our top tier, $10 gets you your name read out on the full podcast like this. What song are we going for?
Derek Rich, Chris Connors, Andy Joyce, Steve Merkel, Blatoms, Carasmata, Andrew McCromer, Cross Editor, Andy McKendrick, Matt Hick, Paul Currier, Jacob Hoy, Wilkes Carolina, Matt Quine, Phil, Tom Z. Laurie Access, Moo, Graham Rabbit, Colin.
This week, worth mentioning, we are going to be talking about Fender's Switch from Rosewood. They released their official statement this week about not doing Rosewood on some of the guitars that currently have Rosewood.
Wood of Rose.
Rosewood.
Where we're going to talk a little bit about the CITES regulations that have
we're
caused that.
We're going to take some questions. We're going to take some questions as well. There are some good questions this week.
Indeed. Stuff about small bass amps, stuff about which pedal board to use with a JC40.
Stuff about Line 6 M9s.
And Line 6 M9s, yeah. So kind of like weird, or not weird, but non-traditional multi-effects. We're going to talk about that as well.
Swag.
So patreon.com/guitar nerds. You should also go to Twitter and Instagram. We're at guitar nerds on both of those platforms. And you can go to youtube.com/guitar nerds videos, where pedal of the week is starting again this Friday.
Yeah,
is that
no,
right?
Oh no, probably not.
Not this Friday.
Not this Friday, no.
But that's like 3 weeks without any content.
Oh, really? Oh, okay. Well, it have to be this Friday.
Okay, good. Something starting this Friday. So, YouTube, go and check that out. There's got lots of new fun stuff. I'm going to shoot the second episode of Mod Mode shortly as well. So, all good fun. Thanks for listening this week, and we'll see you next time.
Cheers,
farewell.
Bye.
Bye.
I'm actually buying a new guitar. I'm actually buying a new guitar. A guitar, not a bass guitar. I'm actually buying a new guitar, not a bass, a guitar. I will never need to buy another gigging bass. Now I've got the stone filled. Bass. Never need to buy another gigging bass. Gigging bass. Gigging bass. Gigging bass. Now I've got the stone filled.